Chapter 21. Piecework. The pain in my knees kept me from any sort of decent sleep that night, so when the sky outside my window started to show the first pale light of coming dawn, I gave up, got dressed, and made my slow, painful way to the outskirts of town, looking for willow bark to chew. Along the way, I discovered several new, exciting bruises I hadn't been aware of the night before. The walk was pure agony, but I was glad I was making it in the early morning dark when the streets were empty. There was bound to be a lot of talk about last night's excitement at the Golden Pony. If anyone saw me limping, it would be too easy for them to jump to the right conclusions. Luckily, the trip loosened the stiffness in my legs, and the willow bark took the edge off the pain. By the time the sun was fully up, I felt well enough to appear in public. So I headed to the fishery, hoping to get in a few hours of piecework before Adept Sympathy. I needed to start earning money for next term's tuition and Davy's loan, not to mention bandages and a new shirt. Jackson wasn't in the stocks when I arrived, but I recognized the student there. We had entered the university at the same time and bunked close to each other for a little while in the mews. I liked him. He wasn't one of the nobility who drifted blithely through the school, carried by his family's name and money. His parents were wool merchants, and he worked to pay his tuition. "Basil," I said, "I thought you made a Lear last term. What are you doing in the stocks?" He flushed a little, looking embarrassed. "Kilvin caught me adding water to acid." I shook my head, giving a stern scowl.
"This is contrary to proper procedure, Elir Basil," I said, dropping my voice an octave. "An artificer must move with perfect care in all things."
Basil grinned. "You've got his accent." He opened the ledger book. "What can I get you?" "I'm not feeling up for anything more complicated than piecework right now," I said. "How about..." "Hold on," Basil interrupted, frowning down at the ledger book. "What?" He spun the ledger around to face me and pointed. "There's a note next to your name." I looked. Penciled in Kilvin's strangely childlike scrawl was, "No materials or tools to Rallar Quoth. Send him to me, Kilvin." Basil gave me a sympathetic look. "It's acid to water," he joked gently. "Did you forget too?" "I wish I had," I said. "Then I'd know what was going on." Basil looked around nervously, then leaned forward and spoke in a low voice. "Listen, I saw that girl again." I blinked at him stupidly. "What?" "The girl that came in here looking for you," he prompted. "The young one that was looking for the red-headed wizard who sold her a charm?" I closed my eyes and rubbed at my face. "She came back? This is the last thing I need right now." Basil shook his head. "She didn't come in," he said. "At least, not that I know of. But I've seen her a couple times outside. She hangs around the courtyard." He jerked his head toward the southern exit of the fishery. "Did you tell anyone?" I asked. Basil looked profoundly offended. "I wouldn't do that to you," he said. "But she might have talked to someone else. You should really get rid of her. Kilvin will spit nails if he thinks you've been selling charms." "I haven't been," I said. "I've got no idea who she is. What does she look like?" "Young," Basil said with a shrug. "Not Sealdish. I think she had light hair. She wears a blue cloak with the hood up. I tried to walk over and talk to her, but she just ran away." I rubbed my forehead. "Wonderful." Basil shrugged sympathetically. "Just thought I'd warn you. If she actually comes in here and asks for you, I'll have to tell Kilvin." He grimaced apologetically. "I'm sorry, but I'm in enough trouble as it is." "I understand," I said. "Thanks for the warning." When I walked into the workshop, I was immediately struck by a strange quality of the light in the room. The first thing I did was look up, checking to see if Kilvin had added a new lamp to the array of glass spheres hanging up among the rafters. I hoped the change in light was due to a new lamp. Kilvin's mood was always foul when one of his lamps went unexpectedly dark. Scanning the rafters, I didn't see any dark lamps. It took me a long moment to realize the strange quality of the light was due to actual sunlight slanting in through the low windows on the eastern wall. Normally, I didn't come to work until later in the day. The workshop was almost eerily quiet this early in the morning. The huge room seemed hollow and lifeless, with only a handful of students working on projects. That, combined with the odd light and the unexpected summons from Kilvin, made me rather uneasy as I crossed the room heading toward Kilvin's office. Despite the early hour, a small forge in the corner of Kilvin's office was already well stoked. Heat billowed past me as I stood in the open doorway. It felt good after the early winter chill outside. Kilvin stood with his back to me, working the bellows with a relentless rhythm. I knocked loudly on the frame of the door to get his attention. "Master Kilvin? I just tried to check some materials out of stocks. Is anything the matter?" Kilvin glanced over in my direction.
"Relarkvolf, I will be a moment. Come in."
I stepped into his office and swung the heavy door closed behind me. If I was in trouble, I'd rather not have anyone listening in. Kilvin continued to work the bellows for a long moment. It was only when he drew out a long tube that I realized it wasn't a forge he was firing. It was a small glasswork. Moving deftly, he drew out a blob of molten glass on the end of his tube, then proceeded to blow an increasingly large bubble of glass. After a minute, the glass lost its orange glow.
"Bellows,"
Kilvin said without looking at me, putting the tube back into the mouth of the glasswork. I scrambled to obey, working the bellows in a steady rhythm until the glass was glowing orange again. Kilvin motioned me to stop, pulled it out, and puffed at the tube for another long moment, spinning the glass until the bubble was large as a sweet melon. He set it back in the glasswork again, and I pumped the bellows without being asked. By the third time we repeated this, I was wringing with sweat. I wished I hadn't closed Kilvin's door, but I didn't want to leave the bellows for the time it would take for me to open it again. Kilvin didn't seem to notice the heat. The glass bubble grew large as my head, then big as a pumpkin. But the fifth time he drew it from the heat and began to blow, it sagged on the end of the tube, deflating and falling to the floor.
"Kissed Kyle on coat!"
he swore furiously. He threw down the metal tube where it rang sharply against the stone floor.
"Crime it, Breviton Iron!"
I fought down the sudden urge to laugh. My Sierra wasn't perfect, but I was fairly certain Kilvin had said "shit in God's beard." The bear-like master stood for a long moment looking down at the ruined glass on the floor. Then he let out a long, irritated breath through his nose, pulled off his goggles, and turned to look at me.
"Three sets of synchronized bells, brass," he said without preamble. "One tap and catch, iron. 4 heat funnels, iron. 6 siphons, tin. 22 panes of twice tough glass and other assorted piecework."
It was a list of all the work I had done this term in the fishery. Simple things I could finish and sell back to stocks for a quick profit. Kilvin looked at me with his dark eyes.
"Does this work please you, Relarkvolf?"
"The projects are easy enough, Master Kilvin," I said.
"You are now a Relar," he said,
his voice heavy with reproach.
"Are you content to coast idly, making toys for the lazy rich?" he asked. "Is that what you desire from your time in the fishery? Easy work?"
I could feel the sweat beating up in my hair and running down my back. "I'm somewhat leery of venturing off on my own," I said. "You didn't particularly approve of the modifications I made to my hand lamp."
"Those are coward's words," Kilvin said. "You will never leave the house because you were scolded once?"
He looked at me.
"I ask you again. Bells? Castings? Does this work please you, Relarkvolf?"
"The thought of paying next term's tuition pleases me, Master Kilvin." Sweat was running down my face. I tried to wipe it away with my sleeve, but my shirt was already soaked through. I glanced at Kilvin's office door.
"And the work itself?" Kilvin prompted.
There was sweat beading on the dark skin of his forehead, but he didn't seem otherwise bothered by the heat.
"Truthfully, Master Kilvin?"
I asked, feeling a little light-headed. He looked a bit offended.
"I value truth in all things, Relar Kvothe."
"The truth is, I've made 8 deck lamps this last year, Master Kilvin. If I have to make another, I expect I might shit myself from pure boredom."
Kilvin huffed something that could have been a laugh, then smiled widely at me.
"Good. That is how a Relar should feel."
He pointed one thick finger at me.
"You are clever, and you have good hands. I expect great things from you, not drudgery. Make something clever, and it will earn you more than a lamp. Certainly more than piecework. Leave that to the Ilir."
He gestured dismissively at the window that looked out over the workshop.
"I'll do my best, Master Kilvin," I said.
My voice sounded strange to my own ears, distant and tinny.
"Do you mind if I open the door and get some fresh air in here?"
Kilvin grunted in agreement, and I took a step toward the door. But my legs felt loose, and my head spun. I staggered and almost fell headlong onto the floor, but I managed to catch the edge of the work table and merely went to my knees instead. When my bruised knees hit the stone floor, it was excruciating, but I didn't shout or cry out. In fact, the pain seemed to be coming from a long way off. I awoke, confused, with a mouth as dry as sawdust. My eyes were gummy, and my thoughts so sluggish it took me a long moment to recognize the distinctive antiseptic tang in the air. That, combined with the fact that I was lying naked under a sheet, let me know I was in the medica. I turned my head and saw short blonde hair and the dark physicker's uniform. I relaxed back onto the pillow.
"Hello, Mola," I croaked.
She turned and gave me a serious look. "Kvothe?" she said formally. "How do you feel?" Still bleary, I had to think about it.
"Thick," I said.
Then,
"Thirsty."
Mola brought me a glass and helped me drink. It was sweet and gritty. It took me a long moment to finish it, but by the time I was done, I felt halfway human again.
"What happened?" I asked.
"You fainted in the artificiary," she said.
"Kilvin carried you over here himself. It was rather touching, actually. I had to shoo him away." I felt my entire body flush with shame at the thought of being carried through the streets of the university by the huge master. I must have looked like a rag doll in his arms.
"I fainted?"
"Kilvin explained you were in a hot room," Mola said. "And you'd sweat through your clothes. You were dripping wet." She gestured to where my shirt and pants lay wadded on the table.
"Heat exhaustion?" I said.
Mola held up a hand to quiet me.
"That was my first diagnosis," she said. "On further examination, I've decided you're actually suffering from an acute case of jumping out of a window last night."
She gave me a pointed look. I suddenly became self-conscious. Not of my near nakedness, but of the obvious injuries I'd received when I'd fallen off the roof of the Golden Pony. I glanced at the door and was relieved to see it was closed. Mola stood watching me, her expression carefully blank.
"Has anyone else seen?" I asked.
Mola shook her head.
"We've been busy today."
I relaxed a bit.
"That's something, then."
Her expression was grim.
"This morning, Arbel gave orders to report any suspicious injuries. It's no secret why. Ambrose himself has offered a sizable reward to whoever helps him catch a thief who broke into his rooms and stole several valuables, including a ring his mother gave him on her deathbed."
"That bastard," I said hotly. "I didn't steal anything." Mola raised an eyebrow.
"As easy as that? No denial? No anything?"
I exhaled through my nose, trying to get my temper under control.
I'm not going to insult your intelligence. It's pretty obvious I didn't fall down some stairs. I took a deep breath. Look, Mola, if you tell anyone, they'll expel me. I didn't steal anything. I could have, but I didn't.
Then why?
She hesitated, obviously uncomfortable.
What were you doing?
I sighed. Would you believe I was doing a favor for a friend? Mola gave me a shrewd look, her green eyes searching mine.
Well, you do seem to be in the favor business lately.
What? I asked, my thoughts moving too sluggishly to follow what she was saying.
The last time you were here, I treated you for burns and smoke inhalation after pulling Fella out of a fire.
Oh, I said, that's not really a favor. Anyone would have done that.
Mola gave me a searching look. You really believe that, don't you?
She shook her head a little, then picked up a hardback and made a few notes on it, no doubt filling out her treatment report.
Well, I consider it a favor. Fella and I bunked together back when we were both new here. Despite what you think, it's not something a lot of people would have done.
There was a knock, and Sim's voice came from the hallway. Can we come in? Without waiting for an answer, he opened the door and led an uncomfortable-looking Willem into the room. We heard... Sim paused and turned to look at Mola. He's going to be okay, right?
He'll be fine, Mola said, provided his temperature levels out.
She picked up a key gauge and stuck it in my mouth.
I know this will be hard for you, but try to keep your mouth shut for a minute.
In that case, Simon said with a grin, we heard Kilvin took you somewhere private and showed you something that made you faint like a little sissy girl. I scowled at him, but kept my mouth shut. Mola turned back to Will and Sim.
His legs are going to hurt for a while, but there's no permanent damage. His elbow should be fine, too, though the stitching's a mess. What the hell were you guys doing in Ambrose's rooms anyway?
Willem simply looked at her, characteristically dark-eyed and stoic. No such luck with Sim. Quoth needed to get a ring for his lady love, he chirped cheerfully. Mola turned to look at me, her expression furious.
You have a hell of a lot of nerve to lie right to my face, she said, her eyes flat and angry as a cat's. Thank goodness you didn't want to insult my intelligence or anything.
I took a deep breath and reached up to take the key gauge out of my mouth.
God damn it, Sim, I said crossly. Someday I'm going to teach you to lie.
Sim looked back and forth between the two of us, flushed with panic and embarrassment.
Quoth has a thing for a girl over the river, he said defensively. Ambrose took a ring of hers and won't give it back. We just...
Mola cut him off with a sharp gesture.
Why didn't you just tell me that? She demanded of me, irritated. Everyone knows what Ambrose is like with women.
That's why I didn't tell you, I said. It sounded like a very convenient lie. There's also the fact that it's not one whit of your goddamn business.
Her expression hardened. You come off pretty high and mighty for—
Stop! Just stop! Willem said, startling both of us out of our argument. He turned to Mola. When Kvothe came here unconscious, what did you do first?
I checked his pupils for signs of head trauma, Mola said automatically. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Willem gestured in my direction.
Look at his eyes now.
Mola looked at me.
They're dark, she said, sounding surprised. Dark green, like a pine bough.
Will continued.
Don't argue with him when his eyes go dark like that. No good comes of it.
It's like the noise a rattlesnake makes, Sim said.
More like hackles on a dog, Willem corrected. It shows when he's ready to bite.
All of you can go straight to hell, I said. Or... You can give me a mirror so I can see what you're talking about. I don't care which.
Will ignored me.
Our little Quoth has a flash pan temper, but once he's had a minute to cool down, he will realize the truth.
Willem gave me a pointed look.
He's not upset because you didn't trust him, or that you tricked Sim. He's upset because you found out what asinine lengths he is willing to go to in order to impress a woman.
He looked at me. Is asinine the right word?
I took a deep breath and let it out.
Pretty much, I admitted.
I chose it because it sounded like ass, Will said.
I knew you two had to be involved, Mola said with a hint of apology in her voice. Honestly, the three of you are thick as thieves, and I do mean that in all its various clever implications.
She walked around the side of the bed and looked critically at my wounded elbow.
Which one of you stitched him up?
Me, Sim grimaced. I know I made a mess of it.
Mess would be generous, Mola said, looking it over critically. It looks like you were trying to stitch your name onto him and kept misspelling it.
I think he did quite well, Will said, meeting her eye, considering his lack of training and the fact that he was helping a friend under less than ideal circumstances.
Mola flushed. I didn't mean it like that, she said quickly. Working here, it's easy to forget that not everyone...
She turned to Sim.
I'm sorry.
Sim ran his hand through his sandy hair.
I suppose you could make it up to me sometime, he said, grinning boyishly. Like, maybe tomorrow afternoon, when you let me buy you lunch?
He looked at her hopefully. Mola rolled her eyes and sighed, somewhere between amusement and exasperation.
Fine. My work here is done, Will said gravely. I'm leaving. I hate this place.
Thanks, Will, I said. He gave a perfunctory wave over one shoulder and closed the door behind him. Mola agreed to leave mention of my suspicious injuries off her report and stuck to her original diagnosis of heat exhaustion. She also cut away Sim's stitches, then re-cleaned, re-sewed, and re-bandaged my arm. Not a pleasant experience, but I knew it would heal more quickly under her experienced care. In closing, she advised me to drink more water, get some sleep, and suggested that in the future I refrain from strenuous physical activity in a hot room the day after falling off a roof.